Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another episode we have here of Suspense Radio. I'm your host, John Robb. We got a great show for you again today. We're going to have authors L.J. Sellers and Charles Todd coming on with you to talk about their latest releases that are coming out, along with some other news, notes, things of that nature. So it's time to sit back, relax, and enjoy Suspense Radio, because 60 minutes of it begins right now. Everybody, Sunday morning on Suspense Radio. Hope everybody is ready for a great show. Like I said, we have L.J. Sellers and Charles Todd coming up with you today. A little bit of news and notes, and we discussed this a little bit yesterday. Don't know if you went out and read. There was a pod, or I guess you want to say one of those blogs that were out there talking about should Barnes & Noble become its own publisher to kind of compete along the lines of with all the other publishers, since Amazon did it with CreateSpace and they're a bookstore, and, you know, should they do it? And Barnes & Noble has Publit, and they're trying all these things. Taking 24 hours into account and thinking about it and wondering if that was such a good idea, I came to the conclusion I don't believe it would be a good idea. I just have to say that I think that our bookstores should stay bookstores, and I think that our publishers should stay publishers. Bookstores doesn't mean just because you sell books doesn't mean you know how to publish them, market them, and do them correctly. And therefore, it'd be the same kind of along the lines of, you know, your local radio store. Let's say if Best Buy started producing music and you started getting, well, not like you could get any worse music you have today, but let's just say that they started producing their own music. Would that hurt the other authors that are out there right now because of, you know, trying to get themselves seen and not being able to? It's a tightrope question that I'm sure will be explored, and I'm sure that they are exploring those certain things to see if that is a good idea or not a good idea. But I would have to say that right now I don't agree with it. I'd like to hear your thoughts. Let me know what you guys think. You know, would you rather see, we've got to have Borders and Barnes & Noble being a publisher of their books and, you know, putting them out in the front shelf because those are the ones that they're going to want to sell. I mean, why wouldn't they? And then maybe charging publishers an even higher rate to get their books into that area, which is exactly what they do right now anyway. They do get their publishers have to spend a lot of money to get their books on those front shelves and those front places when you first walk in the door. Those are the books you see. those are the ones you look for. You got your $30 in your hand. That's probably where you're going to spend it. And publishers are banking on that, and now they're going to have less money for that, along with Penguin being owed $41 million from Borders, and now this coming up. You know, is it a good idea? Is it not? So figure it out, and we'll move on from there, and you just never know what's going to happen. But, hey, first what I want to do is I want to bring on our first guest here. LJ Sellers is the best-selling novelist here. Her book right now is the Detective Jackson Mystery Series, number 4, Passions of the Dead, with Thrill to Death being number 3 and Secrets to Die For, and then The Sex Club rounding out her 4. Her website's ljsellers.com, wonderful website, great blog, find out a lot about what she's doing. So, LJ, how are you doing, and thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me. I am doing terrific. It's been an amazing last couple of months, and as I was saying, I pinch myself every once in a while to, you know, make sure that I'm not just dreaming, because it's what it feels like, living the dream to finally have my books out there being read by a lot of people, and that is the most exciting and rewarding part of this business, to finally be at this point.
Right. I mean, it's one of those things where you want to keep the train and the momentum rolling. And so far, you've been able to do a great thing here with Detective Jackson. You know, the biggest thing is to find that niche, not just that story, but to find that character that people are relating to. And it looks like Detective Jackson is just that character that could probably define you as an author moving forward.
It's been exciting for the feedback about Detective Jackson. People, you know, contact me every day saying, I love Detective Jackson. When is your next story coming out? And it's been interesting because, one, I'm writing, you know, about a male character, and I, you know, didn't know from the beginning if I could pull that off. And two, he's not, you know, he's not the typical, you know, cynical, hard-drinking, you know, dysfunctional cop, you know, which is kind of stereotypical in a lot of crime fiction. He's really very much a family man, a by-the-book guy. You know, he's pretty steadfast. I mean, there's nothing really particularly exciting about him, and maybe that's why readers like him and relate to him, is because he's so real. He's so every day he's somebody that they might know, and that really represents maybe the average police officer out there, or detective, who's really just trying to balance work and family and do the best job that he can.
Right, and so we were talking a little off air, you know, you wanted to get into journalism when you first got out of college, and you kind of went around, you got some journalism, and now you're set up here in the great Pacific Northwest. But how long did it take you, and how long were you thinking before you even started writing and working in journalism and doing something else, that Detective Jackson kind of boil in your head and start, you know, forming himself?
That's a big question. I'll try to keep my answer reasonable, but I worked in journalism for most of my life. Up until very, very recently, when I was laid off my newspaper job, I wrote fiction for 21 years before I finally actually found, you know, a readership. I wrote the first Detective Jackson book. It's The Sex Club. I wrote it about 5 years ago. And at the time, I really wasn't thinking, you know, Detective Jackson wasn't really a priority at that point. That was just a story that I absolutely had to tell. It was just something I felt very passionate about. It involves teenagers and abstinence-only sex education and some political ideas that were just important to me at the time, but I wanted to tell them in a crime fiction story because that is what I love, crime fiction. And to tell the story, I needed two main characters, one a Planned Parenthood nurse, the other was a detective. And so I needed and so I made Jackson, or the detective, a male because I wanted a balance in that story. So Detective Jackson came out of that, you know, idea that I needed to write that story and I needed him to tell part of it. And so, you know, and I developed him from there. But that was, you know, like I said, very late in my fiction writing career. But it was obviously the right move, and it worked. And it's been interesting because, you know, here I am 5 books later, and I keep having to go back to that first book that I wrote, and I'm stuck, you know, with decisions that I made then that I didn't know. I didn't even know I was writing a series. So I have all these weird little things that, you know, to be true to the details, you know, I'm kind of, as I say, stuck with and I have to work with. But it's been kind of fun, but it's amusing at times too when I look back and go, oh, okay, I don't know what I was thinking when I named that character that name or something.
Right.
So.
And now, we were talking a little off, you know, also, and we were talking about technology. And the technology 5 years ago to today, you have embraced the use of that technology. Do you think that, you know, it's a good thing for new authors to be able to embrace as much technology as absolutely possible to make that road a little less harder than it used to be?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There's so much available, so many tools, and all of them, of course, are there, will reach a wide audience, and that is critical, you know, to developing a readership, you know, and to becoming successful is to reach as many people, as many readers as you possibly can, and you can't do that without technology, so you have to embrace it, you have to enjoy it, you have to say, okay, this is a part of my life, and just, you know, get with Twitter and Facebook and ebooks and digital files and, you know, everything that you can, you know, that will help you reach as many readers as possible. Because that is my goal, is to have as many people as possible reading and enjoying my stories. And if I have to, you know, learn to live in a digital technical world to do it, I'm certainly willing. And I think other writers too.
Oh, yeah. And there's a lot of writers, I think, that are taking, you know, kind of yours. And I think, you know, you and CJ West are one of the two that are kind of out in the front about this technology base. I think a lot of people, you're like the leaders and you have a lot of followers that are kind of coming, you know, with you guys. And you're out there doing events and voucher cons. And are you going to Thriller Fest this year?
I really want to. And it just depends on how the money looks between now and then. But that's one of my goals, is to make Thriller Fest this year. I wanted to go last year, but then, you know, I got laid off and our finances went to hell. And so, but this year it's looking more and more possible. So I would love to. That's my goal. I love New York anyway, so it's you know, it's a twofer for me, you know, if I get to go, you know, to the conference and to see the city.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we went to Thriller Fest last year, thought it was a great event, and, you know, we had Steve Barry on and David Morrell and Gail Lentz talking about it, and they're like, yeah, it's definitely something that, you know, all authors should maybe go try to see, because you're investing, because you're getting a lot of different things from a lot of different authors. And, you know, take or leave whatever you'd like to, because everybody has their own style, which is why you're so great and unique. And, yeah, it is a great event, though, to go to, and I highly like it. We're trying to get there this year, too.
I hope to. In fact, I'm writing right now. Yeah. I'm stepping out of. I think I'm going to step out of the Jackson series for a book and write a futuristic thriller. So that would be a good place for me to be. I'm sure there's a lot of good energy there. That's what I hear. A lot of, you know, you can meet a lot of terrific writers, and I think that will be a good conference for me this year.
And speaking of stepping out, you have written two medical thrillers also that are standalones. Now. And now you say you're going to try to do like more of a futuristic thing, which is, you know, besides Detective Jackson, where do you think that your main passion lies in, you know, the suspense thriller genre? Which kind of tangent do you, you know, really feel like you have a story that you really need to have let out?
Well, right now I'm focusing on the futuristic thriller, because it's a genre that I love to read. It's something I've never tackled before, so I'm very excited to write this story. The medical thrillers that I wrote before the Jackson series. I then updated them, and then now Jackson has a cameo in both. But I wrote those when I was working. I was a pharmaceutical editor on a pharmaceutical magazine for 7 years. So I was very much immersed in the medical world, medical jargon. So, and although I shouldn't, they're kind of labeled medical thrillers, but I don't mean to imply that they're not really strong medical thrillers. I mean, there's a medical element to the thriller. They're mostly suspense, but, so that was a strong thing for me then. I still have somewhat of an interest in it. I may come back to that. But right now, the futuristic thriller is something I really want to write, because I think it allows me to explore possible scenarios for where our country is going, you know, and it allows me to look at, you know, some possible scenarios and highlight them and maybe point out some things that could be different and scary in the future that we may not have thought about. So I've outlined this thriller. I started writing it about a year ago, and then I stopped. I got a little bit intimidated, but I'm feeling more confident now, and I think that's what I'm going to go for. And I believe it's going to involve Detective Evans, who is one of the characters in my Jackson series. I'm going to take this character and I'm going to set her 20 years in the future. So there will be something familiar for my readers. They will know this character, but she, will, of course, will have changed a lot in 20 years. But there will be an element of the familiar for my readers, and I think they'll like that. It'll help pull them into it, I think.
Yeah, and, you know, and I think futuristic stories are definitely the way that you can kind of take yourself out, and the kind of the rules don't apply. You know, you just do medical things or, you know, certain kinds of police procedurals. You got to kind of stay pretty, you know, to the vest, because then it's not believable. When you start going futuristic and out there, rules don't apply, and you can just let your imagination just run wild. And it's great that
exactly.
You're taking your character out. Yeah, that's a good thing. You're taking your character out, because then your readers will have something to kind of, you know, look forward to.
Right, but the creativity is still going to be there. I mean, the openness of it, and that's why I'm excited
yeah.
about it, because police procedures are very structured. They are. And I've written 5 of them now. So I feel I'm really ready as a writer to do something living different. I want to kind of break out, as you said, of the rules and just feel like I can really just kind of go a little crazy, you know, which will be fun. Got to do that every once in a while.
Yeah, I want to remind everybody, we're speaking here with LJ Sellers. Her website is ljsellers.com, best-selling author of the Detective Jackson series. Her book, Passion of the Dead, is the number 4 right now. But you don't have to read these in order, I take it, correct? You can go back and, you know, anybody can start with 2, 1, 3, 4 and just start, you know, catching up with Detective Jackson in any order?
You really can. They're standalones. I've had a lot of readers tell me that they started with Thrill to Death or Passion, the 3rd or 4th book, and then have loved it and went back to the beginning and, you know, read from there. But a lot of people have started this series at various points, and it's fine. I do, you know, there's a delicate balance between, you know, how much backstory to include, because you don't want to bore your readers that have been with you all along, but you got to keep everyone else up to date. And I think I hit a pretty good balance that most readers say you can read them in any order, and, you know, it's you'll be fine. There's no need to read them in order to feel like you have all the information.
But when you look back on The Sex Club, which is your first Detective Jackson mystery, and then going on to Secrets to Die For, then Thrill to Death, and now Passions of the Dead, how has Detective Jackson physically or emotionally as a person evolved himself?
Well, he's been through quite a bit. I've really put him through the ringer. He's had some health issues that came up in Thrill to Death. He had a surgery. He was diagnosed with a rather devastating illness, but it's functional. I mean, he's functional, but he has things he has to deal with. His personal life has been really challenging. The woman that he meets in the first book, you know, he starts dating in the second book, and they fall in love, and things are going well. But then in the third book, her daughter-in-law and baby grandson have nowhere to go, so she takes them in. So now she has kind of this household, this busy, crazy household that she didn't have, and so that kind of is a setback for their relationship. And he's dealing with his ex-wife. They have a house together and a mortgage, and he's trying to get out of that. And so he's got a lot of complications, and he's been through a lot. And he's learning to be more patient, learning to be more politically correct, you know, accepting the idea that, you know, he has to put his relationship on hold, you know, to make things work for both of them, his daughter and her daughter-in-law. So he's been through a lot. So there's that balance between, you know, you have to kind of keep him consistent because readers are expecting a certain thing from him, but you also have to let him grow and change. And I keep trying to find that balance, and it's challenging.
Now, and the one thing, when people go to your website, which is ljsellers.com, I was curious to know about kind of like your events. I don't see where there's like a lot of events, but I think that you don't do a lot of out-of-the-size book signings because you do go with a lot of the technology that's out there today. And, you know, you're on a lot of blog sites and radio shows and things of that nature. Do you feel that those types of going to bookstores and doing signings is just kind of the old way, and this is the better of the new way for newer authors to be able to get to more readers the best, you know, this way?
For me, it absolutely is. And even though I love going to bookstores, I love book signings, I pretty much decided last year that I was kind of done with them. And for a lot of different reasons, one, I mean, in Eugene, there aren't that many bookstores here. There aren't that many bookstores within driving distance that for me to go to. I've driven to Medford, you know, spent the whole day driving down there, driving back to sell 20 books, and I'm glad to get those 20 books into the hands of readers, but I look at it and say, is it worth 8 hours of my time to do that? And it's harder and harder to get events in stores. One of the reasons I left my publisher is because it was very difficult to get my books into bookstores. Bookstores couldn't or order them, so that's another issue I have, is there's a lot of bookstores that simply can't or won't order my books for a variety of reasons. Even when I was with a small publisher, now even as a self-published author, you know, it's difficult to get my books into bookstores. It's difficult to set up signings. Sometimes if you're in independent bookstores, want to charge you to come sign. So I've just decided that it's not really the best way to reach readers. And I've kind of, it's not that I've given up on print books, but I don't focus on them anymore because where I'm selling and where I'm reaching readers is through ebooks. And so that's where I focus. I do sell, make my books available in print. I don't focus on them. I don't spend promotional money, you know, trying to sell print books, and I don't waste a whole day driving to a bookstore to sell 20 books when I, you know, it would make more sense for me to spend 8 hours online, you know, blogging and promoting and posting, and I could accomplish a heck of a lot more in 8 hours of you know, promoting online than I could, you know, driving to a bookstore to do a signing. So, and I don't mean to be disparaging of bookstores. I love them, but it's just, they're just not working for me.
Well, I'll tell you what, and, you know, you listen to the show, and a lot of people do, they know how I feel that the embalming fluid is becoming ready to be injected into these bookstores, because literally it is one of the things where I think print is a dying thing, and I don't think it's a bad thing. I think CDs died with music and things evolved, and I don't think it's bad. I think that there's more music being listened to now than there ever has been with CDs and everything else, and I think there'll be more books read with the inception of more e-books because they can get them faster. Why,
and
when you can sit at your house and spend $2.99, you know, on one of your books and send it right to you, boom, 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 you get three of them. Never had to leave your house. You never had to go search, call a bookstore. Do you have it? Well, I can order it for you. You know, and I think
yeah.
And it's always in stock. That's the great thing. You're always in stock.
That is a beautiful thing. Yeah, and I've had people say to me, God, it was amazing. I bought everything that you wrote for less money than I would have spent on a new hardback book by, you know, a best-selling
right.
author. And they said, and I got an incredible amount, you know, of pleasure out of all of them. So really, that's the, a lot of it is price and accessibility. And I think that's the huge thing for e-books, and that's the reason that I have a readership, is that my books are finally accessible at a price that people are willing to pay for an author they don't know. And, you know, when you're trying to sell, you know, a $15 trade paperback or a $25 hardback and readers don't know you, that's a much harder sell. And if they, like
right.
you said, have to drive to a bookstore and discover, oh, it's not here, so we have to order it, wait 3 weeks. Yeah, accessibility is huge. And I think people are reading more now because of it. That's what I hear from readers and from people on, you know, on the Kindle boards and cetera. They all say they're reading more than they used to.
Yeah,
that's
a lot
great.
Of parallels. A lot of parallels with technology between print and e-books. I mean, you look back 15 years ago, cell phones were not as big as they are today. Everybody's got them. People now don't even have house phones. You know, so when you look at that, and then you look at the tablets and the iPads. You know, right now they're overpriced, just like big screen TVs were. But now everyone's going to kind of have them. And in the next couple of years, you know, you invest into that. Probably it's going to be down to like $69 reader that you're going to have in your hand because more companies are going to start bringing them out, and it's going to be the same way. Everybody's going to start having one. Maybe not
oh,
a lot
absolutely.
Of people have them now, but everybody's going to start having one because the investment's going to be a lot cheaper to get one. Instead of $3.99, it's going to be $75 because of the competition's going to come.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, I think we're going to see them be more and more common, for example, in schools, especially when the price comes down and schools can negotiate for better prices because they can buy in bulk and they, you know, they're going to start
yep.
giving them to their students. And when the kids start coming home from school with these neat little gadgets, the parents are going to go, huh, maybe I need to get me one of those, you know. So I really
yep.
think it's going to be very, very pervasive in a very short amount of time.
College textbooks are going to go on them. And why do all of those things where – you know, all of those things are going to be just college textbooks, boom, you just download it right to your ebook. And the good thing is that you're staying ahead of the game because, you know, with your books being out there and you publicizing and doing it first, you know, you're going to be the leader of what's going on, and that's going to keep everything going in the future for you. And then, you know, you're going to look back at this year and next year is going to be doubled, and you're going to be double again, and the road just gets brighter.
It's very exciting. I know. It's so. I keep thinking, you know, I actually got into this, you know, just at the right time. I really feel like I got in on, you know, on ahead of the curve on this one, and it is amazing, you know, for like for once in my life, I'm ahead of the curve, you know. So it's exciting, and part of it for me was, you know, I got into this partly out of desperation because, you know, my husband and I were both laid off last year. I was making no money from, you know, with my small publisher, and I said I got to do something different. I got to make an investment in this. I either got to give up writing my novels, which I considered, or I've got to truly do something different and make them figure out how to make them make money. And I have to give Joe Conrath a certain amount of credit for that. I looked at what he was doing and said, if he can make a living selling his police procedurals, so can I. So
right.
I got busy and said, okay, I need to get out. I need to get away from my publisher, and I need to get these standalone thrillers up there. I need to get everything I have up on Kindle, and then I need to treat marketing like a full-time job for a while and invest in myself, and it was a lot of work, and I had to wipe out my tiny little, you know, 401k to do it, but it was worth it. You know, I just treated it like a small business, and I said, I'm gonna go for it.
Well, you know, what a lot of authors don't realize, even if they're going with Penguin and Simon and Schuster and HarperCollins and the big ones right out of the gate, that is no guarantee that you're going to sell just because a big publisher is behind you. Because they're only doing maybe 1% of their authors, they're putting kind of any marketing dollars behind the book. So you see a lot of those authors that are out there. And then so the problem that they have is they sit back and they don't do what you do, which is going out marketing yourself, which they have to do. They don't feel they need to do that because they're with the big publishers. And they still need to do it.
I know, and that's what I tell people. I have writers contact me all the time, say, you know, I don't know what to do. I've got some books out on submission. I'm thinking about self-publishing. What do you think? And one of the things I always say to them is, you have to sell the book. No matter who publishes you, you have to sell the book. So accept that first and foremost, and then decide, you know, do I want them to make the money, or do I want to make the money? Since I'm doing the work, maybe I should make the money. You know, that's what you have to think about.
And have you ever thought of kind of writing the journey of what to do in today's day and age with, you know, coming up and going with the ebook fashion and going with the self-publishing route and kind of writing down what you did and the path that you took to make your Detective Jackson mystery so much, you know, so popular and how you did it and kind of letting other authors know and using it as like a marketing guide for them?
I thought about that, and I have done a fair amount of blogging about that. People have come to me and said, tell us, you know, your story, tell us what you did. So I've done a lot of blogging about it, and I always respond to people who contact me. I help people in every way I can. I thought about putting it all together, but I know that other authors have written terrific, you know, marketing guides, and I don't know that mine would be any better or any different. I don't know. The other thing is I've got a list of things to do 2 miles long, and I've got stories I want to tell, and I think it's not something that I feel passionate enough about to dedicate the time to, you know. I really want to keep telling stories, so I just feel like I'm going to continue to do that instead, and I will blog, and I will help, you know, and I've done interviews with books for about marketing, so I'm helping out in every way that I can, but I just don't feel like I feel like that's something I want to focus on because it's going to take time away from all the stories that I want to write.
Your website, ljsellers.com, your blog on there is Write First, Clean Later. You have a lot of great information on there. You have all everything about your books. And, again, Passions of the Dead is your Detective Jackson mystery number 4. So, you know, a lot of great things for readers to come and find out about by going to your website.
Oh, yes. I actually have a lot of writing and editing and promoting advice on my blog, you know, and I also have links to all my guest blogs. So, and my blog is searchable, so there really is a lot of information there for writers. And I thought about pulling all my blogs together into a little e-book and putting that out there. And that is something I'm strongly considering doing because it wouldn't be as much work as, you know, starting from scratch and trying to write, you know, a coherent book about marketing. So that is something I might do.
Well, I'll tell you what, I mean, going forward into the future, we have to ask about Detective Jackson because we know that you're going off and going into the standalone science fiction part. But what, and, you know, Detective Jackson, what does the future hold is what I'm trying to get out, and I stumbled over that one.
Well, I actually have a fifth book coming out very shortly in another month, but it should be out by about April 1st. It's called Dying for Justice, and Detective Jackson has a very strong role in it, but this book is a little different because Detective Evans also has a very strong POV role in it. The two are both investigating crimes that have kind of at least a police officer in common. And it was interesting when I wrote this story because when I outlined the story a year ago, that's when I was actually thinking of giving up the series. And so I thought maybe I can pull Evans forward and start a new series based on Evans, but keep Jackson as one of the characters to bring my readers along. So that's why this story developed, that they both have a strong POV role. But I'm going to continue to write Jackson stories. In fact, I'm outlining a sixth Jackson book now, which I hope to write before the year is over. So I'm going to keep, you know, I'm going to keep moving forward with the Jackson stories. He's not going away. I just am going to take a break to write this thriller, and then I'm going to get right back to Jackson 6, and I'll probably write Jackson 6 and 7, and then maybe take another break and write a thriller. So, but now that I'm writing full-time, I intend, you know, to produce at least 2 books a year. That's my goal, and I should be able to do more than that. I just heard that Allison Brennan writes three books a year and has 3 kids at home, and I'm thinking, I don't know how she does it, but if she can write 3, I can write 2. So that's my goal.
Well, and that's the one thing that we didn't touch on that we actually touched on a little bit yesterday with Marie Force on the radio is that people now don't have to wait a year or a year and a half for book 6 because book 6, Dying for Justice, like you said, is going to be there. And when you do it to e-book, it's up in 48 hours. You don't have to wait for the printing of it.
Right. And I, you know, and I can get it edited quickly. You know, I can send it out to beta readers. I mean, I still have a process that I go through with beta readers and editing and proofreading. And, you know, I'm very thorough about making sure that I have a quality product. But none. But that only takes, you know, once I'm done with the, you know, the second draft, that only takes another 6 weeks, 6 to 8 weeks beyond that. So it is. You can get them out fast, which is another reason I left my publisher. Is I had 3 books scheduled to be published, but they were going to come out in late 11, 12, and 13, and I thought, you know, I might not live that long, you know. It just didn't make sense to wait 3 years to put a book out, you know, especially since, you know, it's ready to go right now. So I just thought, I'm not a patient person, and I want to get my stories out there right now. So I did.
Yeah, and that's the silent, because that's the great thing that you've been able to do is that. And being able to get to right to your listener or right to your readers is a wonderful thing. I think I have a little feedback on my end. I'm not sure what that's coming from. Do you hear that?
I didn't.
Okay, good. Well, I'll tell you what, LJ. It has been such a pleasure to talk with you. Your book, Passions of the Dead, but that's just the book 4 of the Detective Jackson series. And your website, LJSellers.com. People can find out all the information about you. They can contact you. You'll get back to them. Check out your blog. So it's been fabulous having you on the radio show today. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you. It has been my pleasure.
We'll have you on again, you know, we want to have you back on again here shortly, you know, to keep talking, because if you're doing 3 books a year, we want to know about them.
Okay. I want you to
beat a record. Let's see if you can do 4.
Well, my husband's looking at me like, what? No,
what?
Kidding.
That's a monumental task, I'll tell you that. It is.
It is, but it's fun. You know, I'm lucky. I have one of the best jobs in the world. I truly do.
Well, I'll tell you what, you have a great one, and we will talk with you soon. That was LJ Sellers. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you so much. Bye-bye now.
So, again, LJSellers.com, Detective Jackson, is her series that's going on, and the book was Passions of the Dead, but that's book 4 of her series with Dying for Justice coming out, making book 5. She is one of the ebook phenomenons that is out there right now, and you definitely want to check out all of her work. She's going to have some futuristic stuff coming up here. I know she's writing a book, but go to LJSellers.com, read her blog, find out all the information you can. So we are going to switch gears right now, and we are going to bring on our next guest, which is actually, the name of the guest is Charles Todd. But when you think about that, you're going to think, oh, Charles Todd, I'm going to think one person. Well, actually, it is a mother and son writing team, and they have a wonderful, you know, inspector called Ian Rutledge that they do a lot of mysteries on. And the latest book came out here January 2011 called A Lonely Death. And we want to thank both of them for coming on today. So this is Charles Todd, but it's actually 2 people. So thanks so much for coming on. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well.
Hello.
So there you are, the 2 Charles Todds, the ones who make up the authors behind Ian Rutledge. And the book is called A Lonely Death. Now, can you kind of explain a little bit about Ian Rutledge and the mystery? Is this one of those, you know, hard-boiled Agatha Christie sort of, you know, whodunit, wait to the last page kind of books that people can be excited about?
It's more psychological suspense. We're interested in why the murders occurred rather than when or how. And Ian Rutledge is a very interesting man. He was an inspector at Scotland Yard before World War I, went off to fight in the trenches for 4 years, survived, came back to his job, and we're picking him up. The first in the series was in 1919. We're up to 1920 now, and this is a very perplexing murder mystery for him to solve.
And so now, when you're looking at, you know, both of you being able to write, is there strengths and weaknesses between both of you that kind of lend its hand to, you know, Ian Rutledge and the strengths and weaknesses of your character?
She's
better looking than I am.
She's better looking than I am.
Don't believe it.
That's
no,
the
actually,
secret.
I think we are fairly well matched. Charles is the one member of the family who has the same side of the brain that I do. My husband and my daughter are the other side mathematically and musically inclined. So genetically, he was there, and I think we're very well paired.
And what made you kind of decide, hey, you know what, let's go ahead. Were you both authors before you decided to collaborate together to do, Ian Rutledge?
We had done some writing of different types. I had done more technical writing than anything else. It was a whim. Caroline had been after me for a while to do it, and I just kept saying, you're crazy. And finally, circumstances were such that I was able to make that kind of commitment, and we got together and did it. Basically, as a lark, something we wanted to do well, but as a challenge, not a let's sit down and write the great American novel kind of thing. And we sent it off to a publisher, not expecting anything. It was an unsolicited manuscript, and now 13 Ian Rutledges, one standalone, and three Bess Crawfords later, we're on the phone with you.
Here you stand. Yeah, I was just going to say, Ian Rutledge is, and I was, Ian Rutledge is your main character, and the book is called An Impartial Witness, and it came out here in January. But yes, you have
no,
done
I'm
it
sorry.
Standalone.
It's Impartial Witness was the last Bess Crawford in August, the latest Bess Crawford. This one's A Lonely Death.
Yeah, I'm looking at the picture, looking at the wrong thing. That's right. Yeah. I sit here because I'm looking at your books because, a lot of people.
You get confused. Your previous guest was talking about doing three and four books, and we're now doing two and don't know how in the world we're doing that much. If you think it gets confusing, sir, you're not alone.
I'm sure. I mean, when you're sitting here and you're looking because, I must admit that, Charles Todd, the Ian Rutledge I was not really familiar with here, and I had to get myself familiar when I knew, because I was talking to your publicist, to come on, and I go, wow, I had no idea that Ian Rutledge has, done this many books and this and that. So it's a matter of, do you get the same thing from, because being set more, in Scotland Yard and over there, do you get the sense that American writer or readers are just trying, are just finding Ian Rutledge and you're getting a lot more emails and fans from America?
No, we've had American fans since the beginning, as well as British, German, Canadian, Australian.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Goes
well,
on.
I mean, so
Turkish and Japanese and French and English. It was rather surprising that we have such a strong fan base in Germany. All of them, I believe now, are translated and published in German. But we hear from people all over the world. I think what draws them initially is naturally reviews and word of mouth. And then what keeps them, our hope is, that they find that they are things that people took time to craft well and were interesting and suspenseful. Our favorite email is, I hate you, I was up till 2:30 in the morning, or the one we just recently got from a gentleman who was a Green Bay Packers fan. He was reading A Lonely Death and couldn't put it down and wound up missing all but the last 3 minutes of the Super Bowl. So
wow.
If we can do that, I'm very happy with our audience.
It's
amazing.
American readers love books set in England.
Oh, and absolutely. I'm a big fan of the old-fashioned, Sherlock Holmes, Agatha Christie, things of those nature, the Scotland Yards, and big fan of the Jack the Rippers and reading a lot about him. It fascinates me more than, the American, police procedural, because it's a lot more... I guess you want to say it's a lot more formal. It's not so, harsh like it is in America. When you look at the American shows out, the Chicago codes and the things like that, it's a lot more, in your face. Where over in Britain, it's a lot more formal and it's a lot more entertaining, I find it.
Two things we did that were different. One, we didn't want a Scotland Yard inspector in London in the traditional form, because that had been done so well by so many people. In each book, Ian Rutledge goes to a different place in England to work a crime. So he's an outsider coming into a close-knit community. And second of all, we wanted the interpersonal detective who did not depend on forensics. We were still in a time that had phones and cars, but forensics was less of an issue, and it was more based on Rutledge's knowledge and understanding of people and how they interacted.
Yes, he's a very interesting person from that point of view. You get to follow him as he works his way through the list of suspects and the evidence, and decides towards the end which one of all these people is a murderer, or in some cases a murderess.
Well, there's something that I find that is just fascinating, and I'm sitting here reading, and I read before, was on your website, charlestodd.com, T-O-D-D.com, people can go, but you actually have a Q&A interview with Inspector Ian Rutledge back in March 1920, and he's actually answering your questions. And so to be able to bring him out of the book and into the light, and, you know, as a real, you know, person, I think fans really find that intriguing, to get to know more about him than you can actually write. So it's a lot more of an emotional attachment, whether it's dislike, like, or whatever.
And well, short stories.
And short stories. But the interesting thing about that interview, we had been asked to do it, and we felt that we knew him well enough that we could understand what his answers would be to the various questions. So those are really what we think the real man would have said in similar circumstances. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised someday in England to walk down the street and see him coming towards me. I know him that well.
And now, if that happens, would you be like, wow, that would be definitely a suspense thriller book to maybe write into that?
That will give me pause, definitely.
So now, I mean, 13 books later, that is a nice run by a character. I mean, is that something that you even came close to envisioning when you guys decided to make Ian?
Oh, no. Our first contract was just for one book.
We had no idea that it would be published. We sent it to the editor to get the usual rejection letter, but maybe some pointers, some commentary. That was our intent. And shortly after Test of Wills came out and received New York Times Notable Book of the Year and Edgar Anthony Indy and John Creasy nominations, they called back and said, we'd like to make that a 3-book contract, and by the way, can we have the manuscript for the next one in 2 weeks?
Fortunately, it was already written.
No pressure. Oh, well, that's good that it was already written. Yeah, Test of Wills was the first Ian Rutledge book. And
yeah.
Now, when people have said, hey, you know what, I've never read Ian Rutledge, and the people that are just maybe rediscovering you, would you tell them to start at the beginning? Would you tell them to go with A Lonely Death? Can they just start in the middle and maybe look at
they can take
which,
their pick.
Okay.
Really and truly.
So there's no order that they have to go in?
No. We try to make each book a story in and of itself. However, we have found going to book signings that people who jump in the middle wind up going back to the first book and reading the whole series. So
right.
you can take your choice. Some people like to begin at the beginning. Some people want to know what the latest Rutledge is doing. And so it's a reader's choice.
What would you say the biggest surprise is for you starting back at the beginning with Ian Rutledge until now with your latest book, A Lonely Death? How he's evolved himself as a character, something that you might not have thought would have happened with him starting from the beginning.
Oh, boy.
I think I would say that we watched him grow and change just as a person would over the time frame that we've covered so far. He's a very interesting man. We learn more about him with each book. It's just like getting to know a friend. You don't know very much when you first meet this person. And then after a while, you are best friends. So it's a discovery process.
And remember, out of 13 books, we're still in 1920, and we started out in 1919.
June of 1919,
correct.
That's right.
So each book is a month to 6 weeks apart. And so some of the progression we see is a result of what Rutledge went through in the previous book, because you're not picking up 2 years later, 5 years later. It's very recent memory for Rutledge, what he went through in the prior case. And there have been some situations that he's been in that have been very difficult on a lot of different levels.
And now let's go to, you know, your battlefield nurse here, Beth Crawford, and with the book An Impartial Witness. Now, was Beth kind of an afterthought from Ian Rutledge? Was there some sort of plot story that you took her out of and decided that we need to make a character like this?
Oh, no.
Not at all. As a matter of fact, it's funny. Caroline was saying the other day about how we keep file folders instead of Agatha Christie's notebooks. We have file folders where we're always sticking things, little quotes and
ideas.
Notes and ideas and things. And we had, for quite some time, been interested in Bess Crawford, the character, and how the type of person that we had in mind. First of all, from a business point of view, we wanted to make sure Rutledge had gotten established and we were comfortable enough working with Rutledge to be able to take on the task of doing two books a year. And second of all, that it wouldn't detract from the work we were doing with Rutledge, because that was where we started and we didn't want to...
Our fans would have killed us.
Right. Our fans got mad enough at us when we skipped the year to do The Murder Stone, which was our standalone. So we weren't going to make that mistake again. We told the publisher right away when we started talking about Bess that there was no way that was going to happen, and she agreed.
And Bess is her own person. She didn't come out of the Rutledge books. We had been thinking about showing the woman's side of the war for quite some time. And
as we did in The Murder Stone.
Yes, but Francesca in The Murder Stone was not...
Very different, but we're talking about the role of women in...
Yes, but she...
the war.
Her story was
right.
Finished. We couldn't use her as a series character. But we had already been discussing Bess, and we had in that file drawer cases that weren't really suitable for a professional policeman. They were more the sort of thing that a reluctant sleuth like Bess would find herself involved with. And so on that basis, we thought, well, we might as well go ahead and put these to good use because they're good stories. And so far, Bess, we just turned in the third Bess Crawford, A Bitter Truth, and that will be out in August. And we're just finishing the next Rutledge, which will be out in January of 2012.
So you are doing the two books a year, Ian, here with Lonely Death that just came out. Now another one, Bess Crawford, with another one coming out in August. Now,
A Bitter Truth.
Excuse me?
A Bitter Truth is the name of the one coming out in August.
In August. Now, seeing as how the books are set like in the 1917, 16s, and the 1920s, do you find that since, you know, it's basically 90 years in the past, And with all the technology and things that are out here today, moving forward, and people are writing about current events and what they know, do you find it difficult when you're writing to not bring any of that technology, you know, not really into it, but to have to go back and write time periods where you might not have been, you know, very familiar with in that era?
Well,
I think what you're talking culturally more than anything else, how the electronic age has affected our approach to things and our perspective on things with the flood of information we deal with. But I think in a lot of ways there are some similarities to be drawn in terms of
human nature.
Human nature is still the same. I still go back to the core, in my opinion, of the mystery genre, and that is the seven deadly sins. And that hasn't changed since the dawn of time, and I don't see it changing anytime soon.
Well, for example, you have to think yourself into the period when you're working with it. You try to see things as they would have seen them, use what they would have used. We have to do a great deal of research about that, and we also talk to people who will say, oh, well, I remember my grandmother used to do this, or my grandfather used to do that. When we're traveling, this sort of thing adds to the realism of the period we're trying to depict. But mainly, I think, as far as plots go, what the human being is doing in 2011 is very similar to what the human being was doing in 1919 or 1800. Bullying is one of the themes in this book, and certainly that has received just recently a great deal of publicity. But it was going on in 1919. School children could be just as vicious then as they are now.
And unfortunately, war is still with us, too.
Yes, absolutely. War is a part of history. You can't avoid
Correct. Yeah, and the aftermath of that still goes on today, no matter what, because, I mean, every place there's been war happening, and those aftermaths have been going on, and there's the stories that always come out behind them. And, yeah, it's definitely one of those things that is very tragic, but, you know, very well written. So, you know, seeing as how, you know, you have things going forward, and you say you're not going to do another standalone that has nothing to do with Bess Crawford or Ian Rutledge, what were some of the things that your fans came out and was like, why are you doing this to me? Why when you said,
well,
there,
one of
you
the
know,
things
you did
they said
stuff.
To us was, what have you done? We finished the book in 2 nights, and now we're going to have to wait 2 years? And we realized that at that point we really had to put Rutledge first, and that's why we waited on Bess. But in the interim, we've been writing quite a few short stories, many of them covering a period of time before we meet Rutledge in A Test of Wills. We learned something about Rutledge when Hamish was alive. And, in fact, there is a short story in the Crime Writers Association anthology that just came out in December. It's called Original Sin. And there's a short story in there that tells us how Rutledge and Hamish first met. So that's been a lot of fun.
So I want to remind everybody right now, we are talking with author Charles Todd, which is actually a mother and son writing team, and their book is A Lonely Death came out. It's the 13th of the Ian Rutledge mystery series that came out in January 2011, and talking about also the path of Impartial Witness, a Bess Crawford mystery, and the next book coming out in August, and coming out Ian Rutledge in January, and they're not making the same mistake of stopping them, writing them for a year because they don't want to have the emails from the fans saying, please don't do that again. So, I'll tell you, it has definitely been a pleasure, and I want to thank you guys for coming on today and, you know, talking to everybody about, you know, Ian Rutledge and Bess Crawford and your journey from 13 books forward now coming up and, you know, how it just kind of hit you, and you had no idea this was going to happen.
Yes, it was a surprise to us, but a very pleasant surprise. And we've been so grateful to the mystery fans and the mystery bookstores for keeping us as popular as we have been.
Well, thank you guys so much for coming on. We definitely
want
to look forward in August to the next Best Crawford mystery. And again, in case, 7 months away, we have to wait for the next year. But that's better than 2 years.
So. Absolutely.
All right. You guys have a good day, and we'll talk with you later.
Oh, thanks so much,
too.
John.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. So, again, that was Charles Todd and a mother-son writing team that writes the Ian Rutledge mystery series that is now out in the 13th book, January came out 2011, of A Lonely Death. Make sure you pick that up. The website is charlestodd.com. It's available at Barnes & Noble, Borders, all the places, if you can find a Borders open. Amazon, and you can go to their website. You can order it straight from there to make sure that you get it. So it's been a great week. We have two fabulous shows. We have two coming up next weekend. You want to check our website, suspensemagazine.com, for everything that's going on. You can also look at our show page here on blogtalkradio.com/suspensemagazine to see what we have, you know, coming out as the way of who's coming up next weekend. I know we're going to have a huge day on March 5th with actually two shows on two different times. We're going to have Lisa Gardner, and then we're going to have Douglas Preston and Lincoln Child on that day on March the 5th. One show is going to be early at 7:30 in the morning. So make sure that you stay tuned to listen to that. It's been great to have our guests here. We had LJ Sellers talking about Detective Jackson. That's ljsellers.com and her first book, Passion of the Dead. And we just spoke with Charles Todd, and that's charlestodd.com. And you can go check out theirs, the 13th Ian Rutledge mystery, A Lonely Death. So suspensemagazine.com, the February issue is out and gone. You can order it from the website if you wish. We will have our link up to our March 2011 issue as we're just finishing that one up. And you can order that if you would like to off of the website. Just go to purchase the magazine. There's a link right on there with a bunch of other stuff you can check out. So it's been a great weekend, and we will see you all coming here next Saturday. Check out the website. I'm not sure of the time. They just kind of let me know when to start talking. So we will see you all next Saturday. This is John Rob, Suspense Radio, signing off. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.